What a joy it is to be sharing in this fellowship this evening, and what a privilege to be in God's house, to worship, to be reminded of God's goodness and grace. Well, sitting on the special seat over there, the one with the arms, it's a little taller than the others, feels like a throne. I was reminded of a little boy in Sunday school who came home one day and told his mother, "I learned some things about God today." And she said, "Oh, what?" "Well, first thing I learned is God's name." His mother said, "Well, how'd you learn that?" "Well, we sang a song, but it has his name in it. And I can't remember all the words, but I know it goes, Andy walks with me, Andy talks with me, Andy tells me I'm his own, so God's name must be Andy." But then he said, "The other thing I learned, and I'm not too sure, but is God left-handed?" His mother said, "Well, I don't know. I don't think God is any one-handed. You know, why?" "Well, it's because the teacher told us that Jesus sits on his right hand. So if he's not left-handed, he's in some trouble." But it's good to be sure that the God we love and serve is not limited as we are by the things that sometimes hold us back and maybe get in the way. And our scripture passages tonight remind us that Jesus, by his example, teaches us what's important, the things we have to look out for, what we need to take note of. In fact, the psalmist, long before Jesus, said that while there are reasons to be afraid, and the psalmist admitted he had lots of enemies, yet he says, "I'm not afraid because God is my light, my salvation. Therefore, those that might make me afraid, I don't have to worry about. The fear is gone." Never said the enemies had disappeared. The fear is gone, because he trusts in God. Then we fast forward to the reading from Mark, and Jesus and his disciples are in the Garden of Gethsemane. But to put it in context, we remember that just before they went to the garden, they were gathered in the upper room, that special place where they'd met several times. And most scholars believe this was the house of the parents of John Mark. And this was a special room upstairs that they had made available to Jesus and his disciples. And here they've gathered to celebrate the Feast of the Passover. And we remember the Passover. That was when the angel of death passed over the Jews in Egypt with the blood on the doorposts, struck with death the firstborn of the Egyptians. It was the final straw that made Pharaoh let God's people go. And every year the Jews celebrate the Passover with thanksgiving that God had the power to defeat death. So it seems quite fitting that it's the Passover that Jesus institutes the Lord's Supper. A reminder for us, the way we should remember him, he says, and what it speaks to us of is death. "My body broken for you, my blood shed for you." That in the death, in the brokenness, comes power, comes life. It's what Passover signifies, and it's what Jesus is teaching his disciples. So they've gathered in the upper room, they've shared this last meal together. He's given the Passover meal a new significance, "my body, my blood." Then they go to the garden to pray. We know what happens after this prayer. Where our reading ended, the betrayer is at hand. We know Judas comes and with a kiss betrays him. The soldiers arrive with all their weapons, and things get pretty hectic from then on, because it's rushed off to have something of a trial, to be whipped and beaten, eventually crucified. But we have this little window in between all of that activity in the garden, when things sort of quiet down for a little bit. It's as if Jesus has gotten away from all the demands and all the activity to have this time with the Father and with his disciples. And who are Jesus' real enemies? The psalmist says he has lots of enemies. Lord, they're all around me. Please don't abandon me to them. There's so many of them, I'll never survive. But with God is with me, I overcome. Jesus, of course, could have identified the enemies as the religious leaders of his day. Saul supposed to be on the same side, but weren't always in agreement as to what mattered most to God. He certainly would identify the enemies as those who came with weapons, because he asked the soldiers, why are you coming with clubs and spears? I mean, you see me every day in the temple. You could have caught up with me anywhere. We didn't have to go to all this fuss and all this work. But sometimes the real danger is not in what's most obvious. Sometimes the real danger we need to look carefully to see. And I think Jesus teaches us by his example in the garden, in this time, away from all the busyness and the activity, and for a few moments to be with his Father and with his closest supporters. He uses this to teach us. Sometimes the enemies are not the most obvious, the soldiers with weapons. Sometimes you got to look for those close to you who betray you with a kiss. Sometimes the enemies are not always on the outside. Sometimes they're on the inside of that circle of people who are close to you. And we have to be careful. And Jesus knew that. I mean, it amazes me that, you know, Jesus, knowing that these disciples would abandon him, would run away from him, one would deny he ever even knew him, another would betray him, sell him out for money, yet these are the people he chooses to spend his last meal with and have some time together. And I think if I was in his shoes, I'd have found some better company to keep for my last meal. But that's Jesus. That's his grace. That's what he's teaching us, that we don't run away from the enemies. We don't try to flee and avoid the situations that are challenging. But in the midst of them, we remember that our enemies don't have to frighten us if God is with us. Doesn't mean they disappear. The soldiers were very present. Judas, well, he'd scampered off to do what he had to do. But all the other disciples are there. And they're all there because they're committed to following him, aren't they? They're not his enemies, they're his friends. They'd be there, what did Peter say? I'll die for you if I have to. And Jesus said, yeah, right. Wait till the rooster crows. We'll see what you remember then. And we have tucked away in the Gospel of Mark an interesting little detail that when the soldiers came and they arrested Jesus and they started to move away with him and all the disciples fled, we have this little detail in the Gospel of Mark that's not in any other Gospel. In verse 51, a young man wearing nothing but a linen garment was following Jesus. And when they seized him, he fled naked, leaving the garment behind in the hand of a Roman soldier, I suppose. And most scholars believe that young man was John Mark, who wrote the Gospel. He was there, not one of the apostles, not one who was always in the group, but quite likely he followed them from the upper room to the garden. Not an enemy, a friend. But he sure knew how to run. I can imagine all those disciples, the soldiers come, the clubs and the spear, and their prayer is, feet, don't fail me now. You've got to get away. And that's the way we think. It's how we mostly behave. We see something that threatens, something that we're not sure about, something that's uncertain, something that challenges us, and our instinct seems to be, get away from it. But what Jesus is teaching us here is, don't run away from it. Run through it with the power that God gives you. And that's what he models for us in this prayer, in this little time together with his disciples who fell asleep. Jesus reminds us the real danger is not always in what's most obvious. Those who call themselves your enemies, those who even call themselves your friends, no, the real danger is in you losing who you are and losing your relationship with God. And so what does he do? He draws away from everything and everyone, and he prays to the Father. Father, all things are possible with you. I'd really like if you could take this cup away. I don't want to impose, Father. No big deal. You can do anything. So you can do this. But always his prayer is the Father's will to be done. And having accepted that, having wrestled with himself, having come to terms between God and himself, that this is what he has to do, he has the strength to face it. Jesus doesn't run away. In fact, he runs right into it. At least a week before this, we read, he had set his face steadfastly toward Jerusalem. And he was determined to go. Even though he knew it, he told his disciples, I'm going to Jerusalem where I will die. But he didn't try to avoid the difficult situation. Didn't run away from those who looked like the enemy. Because he understood the real danger is not in any of those. The real danger is in here. If I lose my relationship with God, if I forget my source of power, if I turn a blind eye to my light and my salvation, then I'm in big trouble. But so long as I remember, and as long as I know, and as Jesus said to God his Father, I'd like this cup to pass, and you know I know you can do it, but if this is what it is, okay, let's go. You and I can have that same assurance, that same power, that same liberation. In the midst of our difficulties, challenges, fears, the things that seem to be enemies or the things that frighten us in life, if we remember, as Jesus remembered of his Father, that he is with him. And as long as he's doing the Father's will, he is a victor. And Jesus has given that assurance to each of us who believe in him. That if we remember, he is with us. And that was the promise he gave. Interesting, isn't it? That in the garden, with all this group who'd been with him, traveling with him, journeyed with him, benefited from all his blessings, every one of them ran away. Everyone abandoned him. And what does Jesus give us as the last promise? After the resurrection, before he's ascended to heaven, he gives his very last promise to us. And it is this. I am with you. Always. I'm not going to run away. I'm not going to hide. There's no enemy big enough to scare me. And neither should you be afraid. I am with you. I love the story of Mayor Richard Daley of Chicago. My Trinity folk have heard this already. The first Mayor Richard Daley, because there were two. And he had a reputation for two things, mainly. He never read his speeches before he got up to make them. And he treated his staff very, very poorly. And he had this particular speechwriter who had been in the office for many, many years and had put up with a lot from the mayor. And he finally got the courage one Friday afternoon to go to ask the mayor for a raise, because it had been a long time. Things were tough. He really needed some more. And he built up the courage and he went in and he asked the mayor. And the mayor's response was, a raise? You should pay me for the privilege of working for me, he said. After all, I'm a great American hero. So the speechwriter, dejected, went back to his office, finished the speech for that night, left it on the mayor's desk along with his letter of resignation, and left the office. The mayor got up that night speaking to a group of veterans. And he was waxing eloquently as usual, and he was following his speech, and of course he didn't know what was coming next, but he got to the bottom of the page that read, "Others may forget their veterans, but Chicago never will. And tonight I unveil my 10-point plan for remembering the veterans." And he turned the page, and there typed in the center was, "You're on your own now, great American hero." But I've got good news. We are not on our own. Jesus said, "I am with you always." Amen.